Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids Podcast, where we explore what connects us all in our yoga practice and in our lives. This is where I talk to people about their stories, who they are, what they've been through, and where they're going. And in this podcast, that's what we explore. I believe deep down inside, we're all connected, which explains why we bring ourselves to the top of our mat every day. Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids. So welcome to the new season of the Heartbreak Kids. This is our first episode and I'm here with Flo. She's in from Atlanta and we just got done with a practice week and intensive here at Ashtanga Yoga Columbus. And you know, we basically set up this podcast, a redo of our last podcast, just so that we could maybe shift focus a little bit. You know, Heartbreak Kids is kind of like growing and changing and we kind of want to move into a little bit different of a direction. And so I guess I'm sitting with you and I just want to thank you for being on the show and thank you for being present this week.
Thank you for having me.
So what do you want to talk to me about?
What is there to talk about with you? Well, of course, I'm always grateful to be in Columbus, so, and I'm always grateful to be a student in the community when I'm here. But to talk to you, I always get really nervous, so I may
come
across.
Nervous right now?
Yes, I am getting nervous right now.
I mean, there's so many things that come up on our yoga mat, and this week has just been like totally amazing. Like coming off of like you know all these Mysore classes and workshops and things like that. It's been pretty awesome. But what's the stuff that's showing up? What do you want to talk to me about?
You know, I live in a pretty. I mean, I live in Georgia. You know this, so I live south of Atlanta, and I practice mainly by myself 5 out of the 6 days of the week, you know, so maintaining a home practice and maintaining that intensity is really difficult when you don't have someone in the room watching you. And you know, it's really hard, especially with where I'm at my practice, to carry that intensity and to really not give up on a day-to-day. I don't give up, but when I'm here it feels like I have breakthroughs and I, you know, I really push really hard. And anything that I could do at home that's even remotely close to it so that I have progress, because I don't get to see you often as my teacher. I get to see you a few times a year.
Right.
So progress isn't quick for me.
I mean, progress is never really quick, though, is it?
Not in my practice.
I mean, sometimes, like, the students have, like, this huge growth and, like, they race towards, like, the finish line. But, I mean, progress very rarely looks like a straight line going upward.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, and like, who's to say that the same amount of time that you spend on Dvipada, which you're kind of struggling with right now, or Ekapada, Shavasana, you know, like, if you looked at someone who is at Marichasana D or in the middle part of the primary series, like, that might just take as long a time as, you know, Dvipada, which, you know, both are difficult postures, but, I mean, they take what they take.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, isn't it more about the journey than the destination?
Yeah.
It's about what you learn on the way instead of like, instead of actually even getting the poses, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I could see that. And Marichasana D took me a long time.
Yeah. I mean, if you weren't stopped at Dvipada, I mean, what would you be stopped? I mean, which pose are you going to be stopped at?
That's true.
I mean, everyone stopped at something, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're not all doing all like 4 series, you know?
No.
Primary series, second series, advanced A, advanced B. Like, we're not all, I mean, everyone stopped at something. Everyone has something that they struggle with.
Yeah. So being stuck or being, I guess stuck is a bad word, but struggling with something for a long period of time, you know, like, because when I came back to the practice and I struggled with Marichasana D for 6 months and then Supta Kramasana and then, as you know, like, it took me a long time with Kapotasana and stuff, but it seems like my benchmark personally, especially because I practice alone, is, you know, sometimes 6 to 9 months I sit and I struggle. And I guess, I don't know why, but I guess maybe that's okay.
No. Right? I mean, yeah, maybe it's okay, but I mean, like, that might be a drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
You know, there's students that spend years struggling with whatever posture, Panchamayurasana. Years, or Kapotasana. You know, I mean, you're talking about 6 months. I mean, you know, like, is it really even a long period of time?
I guess in the grand scheme of things, no.
And where are you trying to go? Where are you racing to?
I mean, I'm sitting here thinking that through my head as well. Like, where am I trying to get to? But I guess it's...
Do you just want to do second series? Is that what the thing is?
No.
I mean, is it about, like, being better in the world?
Yeah.
Or is it about, like, putting your legs behind your head? Because you're actually not far away from putting your legs behind your head. But, like, you know, you look at, like, your transformation as, like, a person. And, like, the yoga asanas have, like, provided a perfect opportunity for you to be better. Sober. Huge. Different.
I guess that's where I get a little worried is not continuing to grow off my mat. You know, like, because I have had such a huge transformation in the last 2 years, and my life has taken such a huge turn, that to continue on that progress and not become complacent on my mat and in my life and continue to be better.
Yeah. I get that. I do get that. But that might be an expectation that might never, like, not be able to be hit. It's possible that you are going to be, like, on a plateau. I mean, you know, it might be unrealistic to think that somehow, like, you're going to continue to grow. Sometimes we actually go backwards.
Yeah, you know? Scary for me.
I mean, me too. You know, like, I'm of the philosophy, like, I'm either growing or dying. Yeah. I mean, you know, like, I'm sober and I'm, you know, trying to be the best person I can possibly be. And we're in similar boat, obviously. But there's, you know, there's times where I have to, like, sit and stay still. And that is, like, that sucks.
It's hard.
Yeah, it's super hard. But I'm not necessarily saying that's even what you're kind of going through right now. But, I mean, it sometimes you just have to, like, let it be.
And that's where I struggle, you know, is, like, just because, you know, as you know, like, with my step work and being done with the steps and kind of being where I am in my sober journey as well, is, like, I'm kind of at a place where I have to just live day to day. And, like, I've used to live in my life so much with chaos that now living in my life where things are, like, okay, like, everything's okay, like, life's okay, like, it's hard to just kind of sit in that and be, like, you know, every, you know, practice, work, life, you know, marriage, all of those things are good. So it's kind of interesting to just be. And I think that's kind of where I struggle too, is that, like, finding that intensity in my, like, do I always have to be so incredibly intense and striving towards something large?
Do you?
I don't know.
Does it feel like it?
It feels like I have to be after something always, yeah.
And currently you're after Dui Pada.
Right now, yeah.
But, I mean, there's been so many other lessons that, like, have come through, like, from your little rectangle mat thing into your life. I mean, like, what are the lessons that you've learned?
A lot.
Okay, well,
I mean, I've gotten
elaborate.
Sober on my mat.
You got sober on your mat?
100%. Learned how to believe in myself. That's something you've taught me, definitely. You know, that I have to do that. No one else can do that for me.
Yeah, you might have taught you that.
Yeah. If you said it to me, then But liking who I am. Like, that's been a huge part of getting sober and then, like, getting on my mat. And especially because when I came back to the practice and I was, you know, heavy and, like, I did not like myself physically and I didn't like myself mentally, like, starting to accept who I was and change those things on my mat was a really hard lesson. And I want to be able to help other people as well with that. But
yeah. What was the first step on you, like, you know, kind of coming clean with yourself?
That I had a problem, for sure.
Awareness.
Like, I knew I always had a problem. I mean, that's how I found you, is that, you know, Google. I mean, I was searching for that. Like, I knew that I had a problem, but I just didn't know what to do with it. And I knew Ashtanga had a place in my life because I fought it for so long, and I, like, practiced it, and then I went to other styles, and I came back. It was a love-hate relationship because it forced me to see that there was something I had to fix in my life.
Yeah. Brings you face to face with the mirror.
Yeah, there's no hiding.
No hiding. There's no hiding in my room, and there's also no hiding in Ashtanga yoga.
None.
Yeah, it brings out all of it. You know, when I first met you, I mean, you were overweight.
Yeah, I was
and you,
obese.
And you smelled like alcohol, and I remember how self-conscious you were.
Extremely.
Yeah, and I gave you a hard time right from the beginning, too.
Yeah.
Because also I related to you. I mean, I could... there's this thing that happens like in alcoholics or people that have like the disease that you can like pick other people out that have the like the disease of alcoholism and drug addiction. And I was like, I had you pegged from the very beginning. You know, your face was red. I remember exactly where you were in balanced yoga, like in their studio, like what spot you were in. I can picture it all. Also, I was pushing you. You could barely bind in Marichasana C.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I walked in. I was like, oh, okay, like, got it. And as soon as I walked over towards your mat, I was like, oh, this is why she's here.
Yeah.
She's one of the heartbreak kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I saw you from the very beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I hadn't been seen that way before.
Yeah.
So that was helpful for me.
How so?
Because everyone else saw me, how I put myself out in the world, like with the facade, like that I was like people, like I had people who were worried about me. You know that, like I had teachers there that were worried about me, but like no one understood. And when you did your Dharma talk there, that was the first time, like literally the first time I was like, oh my God, someone feels like I do. Like no one ever verbalized that before. It was before your book came out, so yeah. I hadn't read your book yet. And I was like, that's how I feel. Yeah. Like no one's ever said that before.
Yeah, I think you even teared up.
Oh, a lot.
when I was giving the talk.
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
And a lot of it, actually, you know, if I was being real with you, I knew that you had a problem, and I was actually speaking to you more than anyone else in the room.
Well, it changed my life.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, I remember it, for sure. So what else has your yoga journey taught you?
To be happy with what I do have. Like it's
what do you have?
Oh, a great marriage. Like, and I squandered that for so many years. You know, and
yoga's giving you an opportunity to rebuild that?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
And tell me how that, like on your mat, translated into like better wife or better marriage.
It helped me understand patience for sure, like patience with myself and then how I can have patience with my spouse and like accept him for who he is and not try to change him.
Yeah.
And I think I spent so much of my life putting my own expectations on him and not letting him be who he was.
Right.
And that was a huge thing, is like if I can accept myself for who I am and like be okay with it, then he should have the right to be who he is and I shouldn't have to change him.
Of course. That's a huge lesson. Most of the time, like when people get into relationships, or what I've found is that, you know, they think that they have to like do everything together, be together, they have to like the same things, they have to like, you know, basically be two peas in a pod. And it's actually not like that.
No.
It's like this person can be exactly whoever they're supposed to be, and I'm allowed to be whoever I'm supposed to be. But when we come together, we're better.
Absolutely.
As a result of it. And we're not trying to change each other or any of that stuff, because that doesn't happen very good on the, you know, from like a spouse standpoint, you know, like you can't change your spouse. Like it's not going to happen. Like it would be easier to like help forge like how your children are going to be instead of like how to change how your like wife or husband's going to be.
Yeah.
Or at least that's my experience. So yeah, so that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it is. Like I realized that he's an amazing person, but I didn't realize what I had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, until it was like, I mean, he never gave up on me, so I'm very lucky, but like I never realized what I had until like literally like I was at rock bottom and there, you know, I could have lost it, you know, because he was in my addiction, you know, he was there for me, but you know, he has his own story. We're coming from a family of addiction as well. And so he saw it from a mile away.
Yeah.
But he didn't walk away from it.
So. Didn't scare him away.
No.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably good that he actually had that in his life. And that's, I mean, because if not, it's possible that he wouldn't be there.
Exactly.
You know, like he had experience with it. Sometimes, you know, that's what it takes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what about like the lessons of like you struggling with posture? Or how does that like translate into like you having some sort of breakthrough or lesson learned? I mean, what's Dwipada teaching you?
Surrender, that one most. I mean, like, because Kapotasana was struggle, but Kapotasana was more like mechanical, like trying to figure it out and like knowing what to engage and what not to engage. But for me, Dvipada, because I have a very open back, so Kapo was never easy, but I can understand a little bit quicker. I think Dvipada for me is just like surrender and also like not getting caught up in my story and not getting caught up in my head of like, I can't do it. Like, I'll never be able to do it. Because like hip opening for me is just hard.
Yeah.
So it's teaching me to, you know, surrender, be soft, but also like not give up.
Yeah. Yeah, it like strengthens you.
Yeah.
Like when you're really up against it, it's not like you might say like, oh yeah, it is hip opening, but it's like, it's actually like forging, you know, like a stronger character.
Really? I didn't think of it that way. I mean, I've only been doing it for a few days.
Well, I mean, even at Kapada, you know, like those things that we're up against were, you know, like backbending is so, it's opening. But there's something about like, you know, even like arm balances and leg behind the head when you have to like sit up and stuff like that. I mean, it's like building a stronger character, you know, because a lot of times we can't do this stuff. I mean, your leg doesn't want to be behind your head.
It does not like it.
Everyone's leg does not want to be behind their head. I mean, seriously, like it's actually not supposed to be there. Like, I'm serious. It's not. But, you know, so it gets behind there and like, you know, it's not comfortable. No. But like we over a period of time, like we have to like find the strength to keep the leg back there, even though it wants to like pop off from behind there. And that's like that builds character. I mean, especially because there's so much discomfort, you know, it feels much different than like what a heart opening like Kapotasana has. Yeah. You know, this is like leg behind the head. It's like, how do I stay sturdy when something is like trying to crush me, you know? Exactly. And that lesson is how do I be strong? Like on, you know, outside in your world, it's like, okay, well, how do I be strong when something's trying to crush me, you know?
Yeah, that's amazing to hear that from you though, because that's very true.
Yeah, I mean, like, in me, for example, like these legs are like super. My legs will crush me if I allow them, you know, just like circumstances.
Yeah.
You know. We're all up against something.
I've had to spend so much of my time, like, especially heart opening and things like that, like the back bends and, you know, spend a lot of time on that stuff, but, like, getting stronger. Like, I definitely feel like, and you know this too with my jump backs, like, I need to get stronger.
Yeah.
So.
Like, yeah, you had a deadline.
I missed my deadline.
You missed your deadline.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got your deadline for...
Eka.
Akapada.
I did.
Yeah. So for those of you guys who are listening, sometimes... For some of my students, I give them deadlines. And I gave Flo a deadline for lifting up and jumping back, and also for Ekapada Shirshasana. I don't do this for everyone, but there's some people that need like to have the accountability of like a task. And so I gave it to Flo, and she completed Ekapada Shirshasana, putting her leg behind the head, but she struggled with lifting up and jumping back. What's so hard about it?
Everything is so hard about picking up and jumping back. It's like, I can't put my head around it. I really can't. I can't figure it out. I mean, I'm trying.
Well, you've been practicing every day.
Yes, I have been.
And every day, like, you walk into the lab of, like, trying to figure things out.
Yeah.
And so have you tried anything different with how you approached your lifting up and jumping back, or if you continue to do the same thing over and over and expect a different result?
Okay, I did try one thing different and you didn't approve of it.
What was it?
I used blocks.
Oh, yeah, because we don't use those. Yeah.
You weren't happy about that one.
Right, they don't help.
I thought it would, but...
I mean, you know, like, you don't know how to mechanically use your legs.
That's the problem.
Yeah, and so your job for while I gave you that deadline was to figure out how to like squeeze your legs into your chest and not come apart as you press down into your hands and try and lift up.
Yeah, and I can't figure that out. Like, I think it's everything from like, I have had such a dead space within my body for so long too, like, you know, from you know, the pelvis, like midsection of my body. And I think that's a little bit of like body disassociation too, like with being overweight and not liking my body. And then later in life, like the trauma and things that have happened to me, like it's like finding that awareness is like scary and hard. And I think it's the same thing with putting legs behind my head. Like, I don't want to go there because it's super intense. And I think it's also trying to squeeze in and pick myself up and throw myself back requires a type of strength that I can't fully access yet. Or I'm trying really hard to, but I, there's a block.
Well, this is, I mean, yeah, we're talking about the lift up and jump back, but this is like the great work of our life. You know, like, or our lives, like everyone, you know, like practicing. I mean, this stuff takes courage. Are you saying you don't have the courage to go into a place that, you know, like you have disassociated from?
I mean, I feel like I do have the courage, but I think there's fear. Like, I don't know if you can have the same, like there's a desire.
I mean, but courage is knowing that something is scary and doing it anyways.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if you can hold those two, like, I don't know if they're like, you know, separate. Like they're like, you have to kind of know that there's fear and like continue to go in there. And like, again, you had a deadline and it didn't happen. And so I'm wondering, like, you know, as a teacher, like, how do I support you to get to the other side of it? I mean, I'm giving you a hard time right now, if you can't tell.
No, I can tell.
Yeah. But also, like, you know, like, how does someone like myself help you?
That's a good question. I've never really thought of what I need from you as a teacher besides just showing up in the room, which obviously I don't get to see you as often, so I have to show up in the room by myself a lot.
I mean, you get to see me pretty regularly.
Last year, yeah, I did. I try to make an effort, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're a good student.
Thank you. That's on tape.
You are. You're a good student. I mean, honestly, like, you know, there's a bunch of people that make my community or the community that's around me special, and you're one of them.
Thank you.
You know, there's a lot of people at AYC that, you know, make it special. Like, you know, obviously you're from out of town, and, you know, like, you make it special.
Thanks.
Yeah. That means something. But still, I'm allowed to give you a hard time.
I mean, I don't think I would be your student if you didn't give me a hard time.
True. If I don't give you a hard time, I probably don't want you as a student.
No. It's a rite of passage.
Right. I mean, I have to be able to give you a little bit of sarcasm and also kind of laugh at you in the Mysore room a little bit.
Yeah, you're good at that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This week, I laughed in the room a lot at everyone.
Yeah.
What I know, you know, one time I noticed when I was assisting in Mysore, India, is that me and Sharat were like basically like going around the room and helping people, and I realized how much he was actually laughing at people as he was helping. And these are like amazing, you know, a lot of them are like really dedicated, you know, Ashtanga practitioners, and he was laughing at all of them. Yeah. And so I carry on the tradition.
Good job.
I'm laughing at people. I mean, also, we take ourselves pretty damn seriously.
Well, it's nice to break it up because we do get a little in our heads and it can get pretty darn intense in the room very quickly.
So, yeah. I mean, yeah. So let's talk about, like, in the room this week, like, what things did you, what was the biggest takeaways for you?
How do I articulate this? That I am worthy to be your student. Like, I'm worthy to be here. Like, that I deserve it. Like, I'm, like, I don't have to, like, I don't have, I don't know. I guess I think so much of, you know, so much, especially, like, we look for validation so much. And that's one of the things that I've learned in my step work, too, is that, like, putting myself worth, like, in the beginning, I definitely did this, and you were aware of it, too. Like, I put myself worth in receiving your validation. And, like, I put myself worth in you. That's where I seeked my self-worth. And I think that now I'm finally at a place in my practice and in my life, which I've learned through my practice, is that I have to find my self-worth, like, validate myself within myself. Like, I can't put that on you as a teacher.
Right.
Because then it'll always fall short because I'm putting expectations on you.
Correct. And that expectation will breed a resentment.
Exactly.
Because I'll never be able to fulfill that for you.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's on you. It's not on me.
Absolutely.
And so many people get that confused. Seriously. you know, there's obviously a transference between, like, you know, what happens teacher, student, you know? So, like, sometimes people do put on, like, oh, yeah, like, the teacher ends up being, like, their husband or their boyfriend or, you know, their brother or something like that, or dad, something like, but to put all of it on them, you know, it's like, it's okay, like, 10%.
Yeah.
But it's probably not okay 100%. Yeah, I'm not your husband. I'm not your brother. I'm not any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a big lesson. So what did I say to you, like, on day two? What was the thing that I said to you?
Which threw me off. You said, don't disappear.
Don't disappear in my room.
Yeah.
And then I told you you couldn't disappear in here anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which being, like, which I didn't understand. So I had to ask you after. I was like, well, what did you mean by that? Because I really didn't understand what you meant. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, like, as I teach in the Mysore room, I realize that people want to be seen, but there's also times when they want to hide. Yeah. And you were hiding from me.
But see, I didn't feel like I was hiding.
I mean, but once you started noticing what happened.
Aware. I was aware then that I was.
Yeah, I pointed it out, and then all of a sudden you were like, oh yeah, maybe I am hiding in the room.
Yeah.
And people, like, disappear in there. Like, they totally just, like, they disappear, and they'll be done with their practice, and I'll be like, damn it, how did that person do that?
You know?
And you did that to me. I was like, oh, how is she on that pose? And then Dawn was helping, or, like, someone else was helping, and it was just like, how did she get to that pose without me seeing her, like, at least three times in her, like, primary series poses? You know, like, how did she do Kapitasana without me seeing her at all? And it's a defense mechanism. It is. It is trying to be a chameleon in the room. It is trying to blend into the numbers.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people there, of course. But still, it's like someone's trying to be a chameleon, and that means something.
Well, and it goes to the also thing of, like, not wanting to, like, be the center of attention either. Like, I don't want to, like, draw too much attention to myself a lot at times.
Okay.
Really, ever. But also wanting to be seen. So it's hard to figure out that line of being like, I want to be seen and I want your help, but then I also don't want to be needy.
I mean, you're not on the needy side of the spectrum, okay, for the record.
All right, good to know.
You know, you're not anywhere close to that.
Okay.
So if that makes you feel, or if that will help you move to the middle a little bit more.
It would, because I guess that's more insecurity too, is that, like, when you go through the things that, like, I've been through, like, you also, like, you don't want people to look at you as, like, a victim, although, you know, I have been one, but, like, you also don't want to stay in that story, and you also don't want to stay, like, in this space where, like, you, like, need babying, or you need coddling, or that you need that all the time, like, and so yeah. So I think that's what I was trying to figure out, like, how to work that in your room and also, like, earn your respect as a student, like, because I want your respect. I don't want to be babied, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and also, like, your practice has matured a lot, you know, like, everything that you're talking about, and also the group collectively, because there was a lot of people that you know, I knew, some that I didn't, but everyone seemed like they grew up in their practice this time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you included. I mean, because, like, what you're talking about is not something that someone talks about when they first show up in the room.
Yeah.
You know, like, sometimes they're, like, begging for your attention in the beginning, and sometimes they need it, and other times they don't need it. But, yeah, so, like, yeah, you're talking about, like, mature things.
Okay. Yeah.
How does that make you feel?
Good, I think. I mean, I mean, last time I came to Ohio too, like, I left and I was really, like upset, because I was like, I got, like, no attention. But that was, like, also a lesson that you gave me, because you and I talked about it, and it was like, you were like, you didn't need me as much as, like, you think you needed me.
Yeah.
At that point, but I was just, like, really getting into the depth of the second series, and you were kind of giving me that space to kind of figure it out.
Yeah.
And yeah, I needed
but you didn't
it.
Need my help. Like, you didn't need my help there. Like, that trip, like, I remember it was just like you needed to be in the room.
I did.
Yeah. But yeah, that was different. And also, you were disappearing during that time too. You know, you disappeared in Atlanta too. Like, I mean, this is a thing that a lot of people do, and I'm actually not giving you a hard time about it. I think it's maybe good for everyone to hear that, like, a lot of times, like, we show up at a class, you know, we want help, but, like, a lot of times, like, you know, sometimes we feel unworthy of, like, even asking for it, and so we disappear in the numbers. Yeah. And sometimes it's okay to be like, hey, you know what? I freaking need help. And that asking for help, or that step towards, like, the teacher and being like, hey, you know, I'm raising your hand and saying, hey, support me, is a big deal. And I think that's a big deal for really everyone to hear.
Yeah.
I think it's a big deal for everyone here. Seriously.
I think that's a good point. Yeah.
So where do you see your practice going from here?
I really don't know. I mean, I know I'm going to go home and work hard on what I've taken away from here. I love coming here, even if it's, you know, for this period of time, because then I can take it home and I can, like, really dive into what I've had over the week and use it in my practice.
Home practice is hard though, right?
Oh, it's really hard. I mean, you get up at 4 a.m. and you're on your mat at 5 and no one's there to know that you finished or even that you practice. Like, no one knows but you.
Right.
You know?
But if you don't finish, how does your day go?
I'm miserable. And then my husband 2 days later has been like, how long has it been?
Yeah.
He knows very quickly.
Does that happen often?
Not anymore.
Okay.
Not anymore. I know me now. Like, I know my routines now. If I don't practice consistently, I very quickly slip into depression. And you said something once that I will always remember, is that every day we either step on our mat or choose to either step on our mat or not step on our mat. We're either stepping one step away from taking a drink or one step closer to taking a drink.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, if I don't get on my mat, I'm one step closer to taking a drink.
Yeah. That just gave me chills, because that's good for me to hear.
Yeah.
It is good for me to hear. So, I mean, because today when I woke up, I totally didn't want to practice.
Shocker.
I did not want to practice. This is like 2 days, like 2 days out of like the last four that I've been like, I don't want to practice. You know, and my body hurt and I was tired and all that stuff. And yeah. That is good stuff for me to hear too. One step towards it or one step away from it. So how does your yoga practice go along with, like, your, you know, 12 step stuff? Like, what does that even look like?
I can't have one without the other. You know, so I was sober for a year before I actually started working a program.
Okay.
I white knuckled it.
You what?
White knuckled it for that first year.
Okay.
Yeah. So, like, I abstained from alcohol. That's what I did. But until I started working a program, I didn't realize that I wasn't spiritually or emotionally sober. You know, I was physically sober. I had gone through the detox symptoms. Like, I had also, like, lost all that bloat and that weight. And, like, I had gotten physically healthy, but I wasn't mentally or emotionally healthy. And until I started working the steps and until I started really digging into the inventories and figuring out, like, my patterns and my fears and all of those things started coming up on my mat. And then I could, like, especially when I was working the fourth step, like, my practice was very important to have. Because everyone goes back out on the fourth step, you know? And I was like, I'm not going back out on the fourth step.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and plus you're already a year sober too.
Yeah. That's true.
So that always helps to have, like, some more time, even if it is white knuckling in sobriety. So so continue. Like, what else goes on with it?
I mean, it's they go hand in hand for me, because I feel like I didn't want to do step work. Like, I didn't want to do AA, if that's okay to say.
I mean, who wants to do this stuff?
I mean,
no one's like... No one's like 12 years old and they're like, oh, you know what? I want my life to go to shit. And then I want to do all these, like, 12 steps and, like, have to rebuild my entire life, like, mentally, spiritually, financially, all of these things. Like, you know, they become like they're a necessity.
It was required for me to move forward. What is it? Like, every next step of your life requires another version of you, right?
Yeah.
And that was the time. And, I remember reaching out and being told, well, I'll you know, I'll work with you, I'll be your sponsor. And I was like, well, I guess I'm doing this. But I told myself in the beginning I would do whatever it took to stay sober. So even though I was resistant to it, I did it.
I mean, and like, how much has your sponsor helped you?
I get emotional every time I start thinking about it. I wouldn't be here.
You wouldn't be here. Okay.
No, I probably would have picked up a drink.
Yeah,
they're like free therapists in a way. A sounding board, like someone who's walked the path before you, just like a teacher, you know, like your teacher's a few steps ahead of you or miles ahead of you on the mat, you know. And then your sponsor too, like your sponsor's been there, they've walked it, they know it. And having a sponsor that also has yoga practice is wonderful, because they know it's part of it. And you know, like having someone to talk to when you're going through those things and going through all of the steps together, and then also like that person asking you, like, have you practiced? Have you been with your community? You know, because it's fellowship, and you can find fellowship in the rooms, but you also find fellowship in your community, you know, especially in Ashtanga, you know, so like they go hand in hand for sure.
Yeah, I found that they go hand in hand for me for sure. Yeah, and I know how you are working the steps. I mean, obviously, like, you know, I don't know what you guys are dealing with, but I know, but it's pretty rigorous, like, how you go through the, you know, the big book and you know, outline your program and all that stuff. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
It requires a lot of work, a lot of energy, and you got someone good helping you. So.
Yeah. I was very blessed, very lucky.
Yeah. You're like part of the family now.
I'm glad to be part of it.
So what do you got, you know, so in Atlanta, do you teach? Like, why don't we talk a little bit about your teaching? And
I teach. I have a day job still, but I do teach. So I have, I teach in Atlanta. I live south of Atlanta. I live an hour south. Mm-hmm. So I teach in Atlanta on the weekends. So I've been like shadowing their Mysore program with Marsha. You know this.
Yeah.
So I shadow Marsha, and I also assist her in Mysore. And then I do a lead class as well.
Cool.
And on the south side where I live, I'm starting our very small little community that's growing within a vinyasa studio. I do lead classes Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then we just started a Mysore class on Saturdays.
Cool.
Yeah.
Do you like it?
I love it.
You do?
Yeah. It makes me feel like of being of service. Like, it's the one way I can give back.
Yeah. And you feel like you're giving back when you feel like people are getting what they need as you give it back to them?
I think so. I mean, I've had several students that that have changed their lives, you know, that are working, you know, so it's pretty
so
amazing.
Cool.
Yeah, it is. I had like one student that is like reversed, you know, you always have diabetes, but like reversed having his medication and his blood pressure medication. He's lost 70 pounds,
Holy crap, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the practice really has to offer a lot to many, many different, or offer many things to many different, you know, types of people or whatever. So whether it's diabetes or alcoholism or eating disorders or, you know, mental health stuff, all of that. So it's cool because, you know, also the thing that really teaching helps me is also like staying accountable.
Yeah.
You know, like staying accountable for like my emotional health and staying accountable for my practice and staying accountable, like, you know, really in all of those kind of aspects, you know, because all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, I'm the leader. I'm a leader in the room.
Yeah.
You know, how has that changed things for you?
Well, I didn't really want to be one. Like, I remember talking to you, like, I didn't want to, like, down where I live, like, mm-hmm. We didn't have a community, and you were like, well, that means you have to start one.
Yeah.
You know, and so, but that made me a little nervous and insecure, like, was I ready to share that? You know, like, I was okay with sharing it underneath the guidance of, like, Marsha in another studio that's already been established, but then going into a place that didn't have anything established was like, that's a huge weight to carry, and can I do the system justice, you know, and do it right? But I had to get over it because there started being a demand for it. And then I was like, well, if there's a demand for it, I just have to, I got to do it. So it's made me feel like it's important because it's growing. So I feel like it's definitely cool. Needed where we are.
Yeah. I mean, people start to grow and change and they get to the practice that might not have gotten to the practice, and it's all because of you. I mean, same thing happened here in Columbus. Like, there was Ashtanga. They had Mysore programs before, but then all of a sudden, like, you know, none of them ever worked. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, the Ashtanga Yoga Columbus was started. So, and, you know, it goes from no community to a big community, which is pretty cool.
Yeah,
so it sounds like you're experiencing sort of the very same thing that we experience, but also people around the country are experiencing too.
So,
yeah, well, I want to thank you for being on the show. Thanks for letting me give you a hard time. You know, we got to talk about a bunch of stuff, and it's really good to have you in Columbus, and, you know, to have you as a student and have you be tied into the whole kind of whole family. So thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. If you want more information about Ashtanga Yoga, visit ashtangayogacolumbus.com. You can also check out my website, which is taylorhuntyoga.com. See you guys next time.